It's time for another episode of The Scoop. Get ready to talk Temple Athletics with John DiCarlo, Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, and Dalton Bolfazer.
Welcome to episode 24 of The Scoop in our second season.
Like Jack Bauer.
Yeah, sure, like Jack Bauer.
Not really a 24 guy.
I don't think I've seen a single episode of 24. Have you?
I have not, no.
24-less.
24-less, beltless.
I don't even watch
24. So we've got, as always, we're joined by Kyle Gauss, Matt Vender, Dalton Bolfazer, producing in the Dalton Bolfazer Studios here in North Philadelphia.
You're John DiCarlo.
I'm John DiCarlo. Sorry to leave that out. I sound so mopey today. I got to pick things up. Maybe it's the weather.
If you were a Winnie the Pooh character, you'd be Eeyore.
I need some juice.
I think I'm right now am I Eeyore, or you think I'm Eeyore all the time?
That's a good question. I would say you're like
generally pretty
you're
like
rabbit.
He was a pretty affable guy, right?
No, he was always yelling at them.
The rabbit was yelling? Yeah.
I'm not yelling, but he was always kind of like a little nervous, a little.
What were you? Were you Winnie the Pooh?
I think I'm Piglet. Actually, I might be rabbit. A lot of rabbits in here.
I see you being Winnie the Pooh, just like walking around, just goofy, pantsless, red shirt that's like just kind of like.
You ever seen the Saturday Night Live? They won an Emmy for this, where it's they always have like the girls that do the songs.
I believe so.
And
yeah.
It's Let's Do It in My Twin Bed.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Fallon guest stars, and at one point, like the whole premise is you're going home for the Christmas, and you bring your boyfriend home with you, and you still want to be intimate, yeah. But your parents are home, and he's like can't fully undress, no pants, just shirt, no pants, like Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. Who's Matt? Is Matt Christopher Robin?
Matt might be Piglet.
Matt's Piglet?
Piglet's the best character. Piglet's wholesome. He endears himself to everybody else. But
he's Tigger.
I'm going to say I'm Tigger. I'm changing all of this.
Just bounce around on your tail, just completely reckless.
Yeah, Tigger.
And I'm Rabbit?
You're Rabbit. Who's Winnie the Pooh?
Dalton, maybe?
Dalton?
Dalton's Christopher Robin.
Yeah, I can see he's very straight-laced. Was Christopher Robin a human allergen? Well, I can't go near that tree. Don't even put honey in front of me. No way. We need a Winnie the Pooh. Need to recruit a new staff member.
Bud.
We're bringing
Bud Knapp's out.
Bud Knapp
is coming out of the minors.
And he's new Winnie the Pooh. Anyway, thanks for putting up with our Winnie the Pooh talk.
We don't get enough Winnie the Pooh talk.
No,
that's the feedback from all the focus.
Yeah, that's what we've been doing. Yeah.
I guess I haven't injected enough Winnie the
really,
Pooh talk.
You're sitting on a gold mine. You really should.
Untapped potential.
Yeah, so there you go.
Was it Thousand Acre Forest?
I don't know. I'm already stretched out on Winnie the Pooh knowledge, but you're gonna look it up.
Thousand Acre Woods? 100 Acre Woods? 100 Acre Woods. 100 Acre Woods.
100 Acre Woods?
100 Acre Woods.
Treehouse?
Owl.
Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, so on The Scoop this week, what you're going to hear a lot of is our conversation with Fran Duffy. So he was a former video coordinator with Temple's football program, works with the Eagles now as their video content manager, and he does the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, does a great job with it. I'd suggest you listen to it and subscribe to it if you haven't already. And Fran does a lot of great video work, video breakdowns. He is at the NFL Scouting Combine this week out in Indianapolis, and had a chance to talk to him to record our interview for this
Once
podcast.
Once a year, the sun shines in Indianapolis, and people pay attention to it.
Hey. Yeah. So, and he was able to kind of just go right down the list with me and talking about, you know, the four Temple players that are at the Combine this week. So, of course, that's Hassan Reddick, Deion Dawkins, Jahad Thomas, and Nate Hairston. And so we talked about those guys, talked about what P.J. Walker's future might look like, even asked him to kind of take a look ahead to next year to see, you know, get a look at which Temple players might be draftable. So we covered a lot of ground. So we have this in our podcast. You won't find it anywhere else on the site. So it's been a good 15 or 20 minutes talking to Fran. So we're going to play this for you now. And again, this is Fran just breaking down each prospect, you know, and his thoughts on where they could get drafted. So some good stuff here. So we're going to play this for you, and then we'll come back and talk about our position breakdown, talking about the wide receivers and tight ends, talk a little bit of basketball, and then get into the mailbag. So here's Fran from Fran Duffy from the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, so this is obviously an exciting time of the year. The NFL Combine is upon us, and Temple has four guys who are at the Combine. And with us on The Scoop this week is Fran Duffy, former Temple video coordinator, now works with the Philadelphia Eagles as a video content manager. He also does a terrific job with their Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. If you haven't checked it out, please do. Fran does a terrific job just breaking down players, breaking down film. And we have him with us today to talk about the guys who are at the Combine, Hassan Reddick, Deion Dawkins, Jahad Thomas and Nate Harrison. Fran, thanks for joining us. Really appreciate some time. First of all, what's it, you know, you just got out of the media availability session there. If you had to explain to a fan what it's like to be there to cover it and just be part of it, what's a day like out there covering the combine?
Well, thanks, John. And it's honestly, the experience is awesome. You know, it's a really fun week because you get to talk with a lot of players. You get to talk with a lot of members of the media. You get to talk with coaches and scouts and, you know, executives at the highest level in terms of the NFL. So the entire city of Indianapolis is just crawling with NFL people. So, you know, you go out to lunch, you go out to dinner, you go out for drinks. Everybody's out and about. So you get to talk with people and meet with people and just kind of pick their brain about certain things. And it's just a great week overall. I mean, it's a great experience. You glean a lot of information, and that's all off the field. And then you get through the whole process that all the players go through. And you know, you have the medical checks, and you have the interviews, and obviously all the physical testing. You have the measurables. So lots of information to glean from this week. It's a huge week in the process as these guys transition to the NFL.
Let's get to the players themselves. Hassan Reddick, a pretty good story, interesting story. I mean, he's by far not the first, you know, college football player to be a walk-on to go to the NFL, but a guy who told me after a game this year that he wasn't even sure he could come to Temple without a scholarship and was that humble about it. And you know, the consensus is now that he had a very good Senior Bowl, looked good in practice, looked good in drills. Just from your, you know, being able to watch him and your evaluation of him, what do you think of him? Where do you think he could get drafted? Obviously, a lot of that will depend on what happens this week. But what are your thoughts on him, and what are people, you know, saying to you about him?
You know, coming into the year, he was really off people's radar from an evaluation standpoint. Everybody knew that, you know, he was undersized and he was athletic, and it was, you know, but no one really knew, all right, well, what can this guy be at the next level? And then he goes out and he has such a strong year once again. And I think he really opened some eyes this year as a senior, where it's at a level of it's not just the area scouts in the Northeast that are now taking notice. I think on a national level, because of how productive he was, Hassan Reddick really kind of opened some people's eyes from a coach and GM and upper-level executive standpoint. So, you know, you see Hassan Reddick, and the biggest thing with him was you go down to the Senior Bowl, and when you watched him, you knew, okay, you know, 6'2", you know, 225, 230 pounds, you know, can he stand up and play as a linebacker inside, not as a 3-4 rush linebacker coming off the edge, but you know, as a weak side linebacker, as a middle linebacker. And when I watched him, that was kind of what I thought his best route would be to get to the league, not necessarily as a hand in the dirt pass rusher, but more standing up. And I was really happy to see that Phil Savage and his crew down there at the Senior Bowl had him do that with the Cleveland Browns and the North squad. And so you got to see him do that. And, John, it's not a great group of linebackers in this class, and it wasn't a great group of linebackers at the Senior Bowl, but he was the best one there. I mean, against guys that, you know, maybe were bigger names, Ben Boulware from the Clemson Tigers and some other guys from some bigger schools. I mean, he stood out. He was the guy that played sideline to sideline consistently. He read the inside run well. Obviously, he had a leg up on those guys when it came to blitzing drills, but he also made plays in reverse. Remember, he started as a walk-on corner there with Temple, so he's got some of that experience in coverage. So all of that came into play, and he won the practice player of the week for the linebacker position at the Senior Bowl. It was great to see him come in. And I had some time to speak with him as well. I talked to him for probably about 15, 20 minutes one of the nights down there in Mobile. And you know, just a great kid that really understands the whole process and what he's got to do to get to the next level and last in the next level. I think he gets it. So really, really excited to see him take the next step here now at the combine and set himself apart athletically, because that's a whole other animal. So that's going to be really, really big for him this week.
And that seems to be, I mean, people do talk about his athleticism a lot. I mean, if he tests well down there, is he a guy that maybe sneaks into the end of the first round? Is that a possibility for him, or is it still kind of too early to tell right now?
I'll tell you what, man, some people think that from a media standpoint. I will say that I don't personally see it that way. I don't know that I could convince somebody that he's one of the 32 best players in the country.
Right.
But what you look at with him is that you see a player that is really green from the linebacker position, right? I mean, you see the athletic ability, and like you mentioned, I mean, we all knew that, okay, if he went and he ran with a defensive line, he was going to be, you know, a stud in terms of comparing his numbers to other players that were much bigger along the defensive line. But running with the linebackers, if he goes and has one of the best workouts from a linebacker respect, I think people are going to continue to open their eyes. But the biggest thing, though, that he has to prove is can he read the run consistently? Key and diagnose plays early in the snap and really kind of understand what offenses are throwing at him from a completely different position than what he's used to? Because, you know, when you play with your hand on the ground off the edge against the offensive tackle, things are way, way different, way, way faster. Things are happening from a completely different vantage point now when you're playing as a middle linebacker. So that was one. That's why, honestly, to me, his performance at the Senior Bowl was probably more important than what he would do this week at the Combine from an athleticism standpoint. Really, the big thing that he's going to have to do this week is just go to those interviews at night, because all the teams have a certain amount of interviews with prospects at night here in Indianapolis up until about 10:30 at night. So he's going to have to go into those interviews and really kind of prove to teams that he has what it takes mentally, you know, do what he's got to do up on the whiteboard and with film work, that he has what it takes mentally to make that transition to whether it's a 3-4 defense or a 4-3 scheme inside as a linebacker standing up.
Gotcha. With Deion, you know, played left tackle at Temple, did a pretty good job, and then also got some work in, I guess primarily got a lot of work in at guard in the Senior Bowl, and maybe that's where more teams see him now. What did you see of him down there, and what's the general rub on him right now?
Well, like Hassan, I mean, he won the Practice Player of the Week award for the Senior Bowl at the offensive line, and there were some talented linemen down there, so that was a really big get for him. I thought going into the week that he was one of the two or three best natural tackles in the senior class. Now, I think when his measurements came in, and most notably, he came in under 6'4", 6'3", and 7'8", and that's kind of one of those things where some teams will look at that and say, yeah, my tackles, even though he's got longer arms, I mean, he's got 34.5-inch arms, and that's above average for tackles drafted in the last 5 years. That's not a bad number. Some people will look and say, you know what, I just need my tackles to be 6'5.5", 6'6", 6'7". So that'll come to – but I think the fact that he went down to the Senior Bowl, he played mostly guard, like you said, the last day of practice, I want to say it was Thursday's practice, he played a little bit more tackle, but spent most of the week at guard. He's got really good feet. I mean, you know, he's got some things to clean up from a hand perspective, but the biggest thing for me is that when I watched him on tape, he didn't always see things as quickly as you would like coming at him from a pressure standpoint. So if you're going to ask a guy to make that transition from tackle to guard, where things happen a lot faster, especially at the NFL level, making that jump into the league, things are going to be happening much faster for him as a guard than they would as a tackle in the college ranks. So that would be the biggest transition for him if he does, in fact, move to guard. I still think, though, that he has what it takes to be a tackle. I expect him to be in the upper echelon of the offensive lineman in terms of workouts. I don't know that he's going to be the, you know, a top two or top three tester at the position this week, but I do expect him to be in the top quarter, the top third of the athletic numbers this week when it comes to the offensive line position.
And going right on down the line, Jahad Thomas, saw his workload, you know, cut back a little bit with the help of Rockwell Armstead this year. Missed a couple of games at the outset of the season because of an injury. So his numbers were down a little bit from what they were last year. I guess if you were to try to project early on, maybe at the high end of things, he's a third down back, maybe a special teams guy in the NFL. But how do you see him? And is he a possibility to, you know, is he a guy that gets drafted, you think?
I think he's probably right on the fringe of where you'd want him to be in terms of being a drafted prospect, because it's such a strong running back class. What I do think he has working for him, though, you remember, obviously, he started on the defensive side of the football. He's a kick returner as well. So he's got what people look like or will look at as some special teams versatility, not just as a returner, but also in coverage. So for teams that are looking for a third or fourth running back to stick on the back end of a roster, he's got that ability to say, you know what, like, if we need you to run down on kicks, we need you to cover punts. He can do that as well as offer some versatility as a returner. We know he can catch the ball out of the backfield. He was used in a variety of different ways this year offensively. Like you mentioned, wasn't necessarily the feature back in that offense, but was used in a complementary role, was moved around the formation and used on jet sweeps and things like that. So he can be used in a number of different ways in an NFL offense. The question will be, to me, at his size, and it's under 5'10", 185 pounds, I'd like to see him be a little bit bigger. So hopefully he comes in this week. He was listed 185 by Temple. Hopefully he comes in, you know, in the 192, 193 range. Still not great, but a little bit better. And then hopefully he tests well enough to kind of stand out. Because if you're going to be undersized in the NFL, you've got to be special in other areas to make up for that. So he's got to prove to teams that he's an exceptional athlete. And that's going to be one of the things he will have to prove this week.
He did catch the ball. I mean, they used him. I mean, it seemed like his progression was when he was a sophomore, he really kind of
made his way in the screen game. And then the analysis or the observation seemed to be okay. Now he's going to have to do more than that because he was getting caught from behind on some of those screens. And then last season, obviously had a terrific season. Didn't end the way he wanted to, got banged up at the end of the season. This year didn't catch the ball out of the backfield quite as much, but like you said, they used him in a variety of different roles. His ability, or the fact that he's shown the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, how much does that help him?
Oh, it definitely does. Teams are always looking for players that can impact third down, and when you're a player that's got great hands and you've been moved around the formation, you've got experience in the slot and out wide, even if it is just in those gadget-type plays, I think that's definitely going to help his cause. But I do. It's like you said, you know, the speed in the open field, you know, can he be more than just above average? Can he be, you know, I think scouts probably had him in the mid 4.4 range, like 4.45 coming into the year. Can he be, you know, can he be closer to 4.4 flat? Can he even break 4.4? I mean, that would be something to really, really help his cause, because it's one of the best running back classes we've seen now in quite some time. And in order for him to break into that mold of that, you know, sixth, seventh round pick, he's going to have to really set himself apart from some of these other players in the lower end of the draft.
Now, speaking of a position, another position that's viewed to be pretty deep, a cornerback, you have Nate Harrison, another guy who, really like all these guys, maybe with the exception of maybe Dion, who had flipped from Cincinnati over to Temple. Nate Harrison comes in as a pretty unheralded guy from Maryland, and put together a pretty good senior season at cornerback. And again, he's at a position that seemed to be really, really deep in the draft. Obviously, a good week out there in Indianapolis would really help him. What's your take on Nate Harrison? And could he be drafted, or is he more so looking at a situation where he's probably an undrafted rookie free agent?
Sure. John, you know how I feel about the players that have come out of Temple that were unheralded recruits, and you go back to the Muhammad Wilkersons and the Bernard Pierces, sure, and all those guys. And, you know, could Harrison be, you know, the next Tahir Whitehead, who was, you know, a day three selection and kind of makes the league as a backup and earns a starting role? I mean, it's interesting that the staff moved him from receiver over to the defensive secondary. I only watched one game of him this year in preparation for going down to the East-West Shrine game. And you know, I wasn't down there this year at the Shrine game. From what I was told, he had his ups and downs, more ups than downs, but still fared pretty well. Like you mentioned, it's a deep corner class, but you know what they say is that in every year in the draft, there's never the supply of corners that meets the demand. You know, every team wants cover guys. Every team wants players that can match up with four or five receivers across the formation. So on average, over the last 5 years, 31 corners have been taken. That's more than any other position. I would imagine that if this, you know, the corner class is as strong as everyone thinks it is, it will put that saying to the test. And I think Nate Harrison's right on the back end of this group. I do think that he's a draftable prospect when you look at this group overall. And I think one of the reasons why is he's kind of got that raw athletic ability that you want. You know, he's just under 6 foot. He's got above average size. Obviously, you hit the idea of his ball skills as a former receiver. He's got the hands to be able to secure for interceptions. It's really going to come down to him. Number one is going to be when he goes on these individual workouts, you know, when he gets worked out at his pro day by position coaches, and that's going to be a big thing where, you know, that now when you're talking about players at that level that are the late round draft picks, potential undrafted free agents, the position coach's input is going to be really, really important for him. And if he can convince a secondary coach, a cornerbacks coach or a defensive backs coach to say, you know what, I think I can really work with this kid and really make him into something, now he's got a shot. And I do think that he's got you know, some of the tools that you want. He made some really impressive plays this year that I wouldn't have expected from a guy who had only been playing defense for 2 years from a mental standpoint. And like I mentioned, it was the athletic ability. And that's an area like Jahad Thomas where if he comes out this week in Indianapolis and they'll work out next Monday, if he can come out on Monday and run a really good 40 and look really good in all the jumps and the shuttles and kind of set himself apart from a composite athletic standpoint, I think now you're talking about him as a surefire, you know, fifth, sixth round draft choice. I don't know that he's going to go as high as Tavon Young went last year in the fourth round, but I think that he's got the ability to sneak into the back end of the last day of the draft.
One last question on the current guys. Now, he's not at the combine. What's your take on P.J. Walker's future, Philip Walker's future? I know he's had his ups and downs, but numbers-wise, he's going to go down as one of the most successful quarterbacks to have ever played at Temple, won a lot of games. I'm sure if NFL teams are looking at him, the first thing they're going to get him on is his height. The arm strength is there. What do you see as his future? Is he a guy that just hopes to break in with a team as a rookie free agent, maybe try to impress as a camp arm? Is he better suited for the CFL? I mean, what do you think his pro future is?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in that realm, John. I think when you look at him, the size is certainly going to be an issue for some people. But you're talking about a player, and this is going to be interesting because it's not a great quarterback class, and it's also not a quarterback class that's littered with players that came from pro-style schemes. And with what Philip was asked to do over the last 2 years, you know, in that offense where there were a lot of pro-style passing concepts, you know, he did some work from under center as well as in the gun. They had a lot of pro-style things in that offense. I think that he's got the chance to come in and impress some people. The question will be is, can he make coaches confident from a mental standpoint? And then also, does he have the physical tools? And I do think that, like you mentioned, the arm strength is there. The athletic ability is there. He's 5'11 and change, and that's going to hurt him. You know, he's 5'11 and a quarter by what scouts have him at right now. The question will just be, you know, does he have some of those mental traits that you want from a quarterback at the next level? He's got a quick release. He's got the athletic ability. He's got the arm strength. The physical tools are there. It's just a consistency standpoint. So ultimately, I my guess would be that he'll probably end up more in like the CFL and see if he can work his way into the league in the back, you know, on the back end. But to me, I think he does have a shot to end up in a training camp and show what he's got because it's not a great quarterback class. So teams that are looking to gather some of these rookies, I think he does have a shot just from a pure number standpoint.
And as a guy who's in Philly and keeps a close eye on the program, let's take a look at the roster. Who else in this Temple football program do you think has a pro future if you were to try to project ahead to beyond this current draft class? Who do you think has a shot to get to the NFL?
Well, you certainly like what you see from Ventel Bryant. You know, with his size and his movement, I think there are some things to be excited about there. I think when you look at the young running back, you know, you look at Raquel Armstead. You know, I remember watching that South Florida game. The way that he ran the football was so impressive at 5'11", 205 pounds. I'm excited to see what Armstead can do in this new offense and what they're able to do there now on North Broad Street. I think Nick Sharga, obviously you like his story and everything that he brings to the table as a kind of that physical blocker as a fullback. I think that some teams are still looking for those kinds of players, and it's kind of a lost art. So to me, I mean, Nick Sharga could be one of those guys that maybe he doesn't even get drafted, but kind of makes a team just based off of what he can do in special teams and as a lead blocker. You know, defensively, I mean, Sean Chandler, for sure, as a safety, I think people are going to be interested in. There's a lot of really interesting players that I think people are excited about in this program. Obviously, you look at the way that they've recruited over the last couple of years. I'm excited to see what they'll look like in these new schemes under Jeff Collins. But it's a really interesting group of young guys coming up.
I'll ask you, while we have you, a couple of quick Eagles questions. And there's, I guess, a Temple tie-in. So if they end up going with a cornerback, there's a guy there in Jalen Tabor who could be a possibility. He's coached by Jeff Collins, Temple's new football coach. I know, again, it's early. Draft is still several weeks away. But what does your gut tell you in terms of what the Eagles do there? And who are some of the players that could be there with that pick, provided they don't move up or do anything different?
You know, I think that one of the things you're going to see is that the draft's going to come to them. You know, I don't think that they're going to try and shoehorn themselves into forcing, all right, we have to take a corner, we have to take a receiver, we have to take a pass rusher, we have to take a running back. I think they're going to see how, you know, the first 14 or 15 selections go, or the first 13 or 14 selections go, and see how the board comes to them. Now, you look at the mock drafts all around. I mean, we talked about the cornerback class. There's been, you know, a handful of guys at the cornerback spot that people are talking about for the Eagles. You know, it could be a Marlon Humphrey from Alabama, who is as physical as they come, a great tackler, great run defender, outstanding physical skills from a straight line speed and athletic ability standpoint. He's a former track athlete. The question is ultimately his ball skills, his ability to find the ball late in the down. You know, you talk about Tre'Davious White from LSU, who's 5'11", 191, physical, played every position in the secondary, great kid off the field, and brings everything you want physically. Cordarius Tankersley from Clemson, who, again, 6', 194, he's got good size for the position and can run and has great ball skills. I mean, there's a lot of corners. The Washington kid, Sidney Jones, the two Florida kids you mentioned, Jalen Tabor, and as well as Quincy Wilson. Some people are talking about him as a first-round pick as well. So just at the cornerback spot alone, people are mentioning those players. Receiver Corey Davis is a guy that I've always been a big fan of out of the MAC. has been super productive, but more importantly, as a really polished player. He gets it as a route runner. He knows what he's doing in space to try and create separation, and he's really good after the catch. Mike Williams from Clemson is an outstanding talent as well. His physicality, his ability to go up and win those 50-50 balls kind of sets himself apart. So really, really, it's a lot of interesting players at perceived areas of need when you're looking at what people think the Eagles need to add to this roster. I just don't think that they're going to force anything from a need respect. I do think that they will try to stick to this board as closely as they can as they continue to set it over the next couple of weeks.
Again, Fran Duffy works with the Eagles as their video content manager. Again, does a terrific job, as you just heard him here, and does a great job with their Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Definitely check it out. It's a terrific listen. Fran, thanks so much for spending some time with us. I know it's a busy week for you. Really appreciate it, and hopefully we'll catch up with you soon.
Absolutely, John. Thanks.
All right, so some great stuff there from Fran. A lot to react to, a lot to talk about. So, I mean, I guess we'll first talk about Hassan Reddick, who, you know, we've talked about this before, really helped himself in the Senior Bowl, really proved that he could drop into coverage. I mean, did well in practice, and now he's going into the combine this week as a linebacker, not so much as a rush end or a defensive end. But, you know, one of the things that Fran essentially said there was, like, you know, he could really help himself athletically. You know, Fran isn't quite sure if he's one of the top 32 players in the draft, but
sure.
An exciting opportunity.
Matter, right? Yeah. It's one team has to take a chance on you.
Yeah.
Like, the top 32 guys aren't going to be drafted in the first round.
Sure.
But I think one thing that Hassan kind of has going against him, which isn't really a negative, is we were talking about this a little bit before the air. He's not going to be weighed up against defensive ends where his athleticism really stood apart. And,
right.
I mean, at one point last year, Hassan Reddick dropped. I mean, a lot of times last year, Hassan Reddick dropped back into coverage as, like, a defensive back. He picked off a pass in the championship game.
Yeah, kind of in garbage
kind of
time,
like,
but still.
But
yeah, but look good doing it, getting out to the sideline.
That
yeah.
being said, he's going to be going up. He's trying to be a linebacker at the next level. He's going to be going up against a lot of guys that can run similar speeds, stuff like
yeah.
that. One thing I did think that was interesting that Frank said was, Senior Bowl, he showed that he can drop in covers, not necessarily as like an edge, like a rushing linebacker,
maybe
but as
middle
like
linebacker.
A middle linebacker, a weak side linebacker in a 4-3. Like somebody that's expected, like you're going to actually have to play linebacker. He's not going to be, not Von Miller. Who was the linebacker for the Broncos that got like 20 sacks one year, like 3 or 4 years ago? Because all he did was just rush. I'll look it up. He ended up signing with the Ravens, I believe, after that.
Why am I drawing a blank on this?
Denver Broncos, 2003.
Matt may not make it through the whole podcast,
yeah,
by the way.
Matt, who I don't think said anything yet, is a little sick.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm dealing with a little bit of a cough.
The one guy I...
Nicest member of the Al Scoop staff. Apologize
by
for his
far.
Cough.
It's not even close.
Yeah.
God, I'm going to blank on this guy. He ended up signing with the Ravens right after. But anyway, he was like a...
Making him up?
Strictly all he did was
Mark
rush.
Gastineau.
What?
No, I'm just kidding.
was rush.
Sack exchange.
So like Hassan Reddick has shown the ability to eliminate glimpses to do more than that. So mm-hmm. I'm thinking of...
What are you thinking of?
I think I'm thinking of DeMarcus Ware, but that's not who I originally planned on thinking of. Maybe that's who I was thinking of. DeMarcus Ware did a lot more than just that.
Well, never know. What about the stuff you said about Deion Dawkins? About, you know, he spent a lot of time playing guard in the Senior Bowl and the Senior Bowl practices, and then I think Fran said, you know, at that last day they did try and back out a tackle. Obviously he played left tackle at Temple, but you know, Fran seems to be pretty high on him. One of the things he said there was that, you know, some NFL teams will say, hey, my tackles have to be 6'4", 6'5", and Deion measured in at, what, like 6'3
and
a quarter, I think he said. So there's, I don't know, he has position flexibility going for him. But Fran thinks he could be a right tackle in the NFL, was pretty high on him. So, you know, a guy that he said may not blow people off the charts with his combine numbers, but...
I mean, Dawkins, in my limited opinion, is the prospect that has the clearest like projection to be a starter, right? Like, he's the type of guy that will get drafted in the second round, third round. That versatility allows him to kind of slide in, whether it's at guard, whether it's at right tackle, to start almost from day one in the NFL.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that he said that Deion projects as a tackle. I mean, everything that you kind of read and everything you hear probably points to him being a guard. I mean, I think that's been the buzz, that he can move over and play guard. But... You know, yeah, I was a little surprised to hear that, but I think, you know, it's all about fit, and I think there's probably, a few NFL teams that could see him at tackle down the line. Maybe next year he starts off at guard and develops there and then moves out to tackle. But, yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking at drafting him, you're looking at a guy that could definitely play two positions and have that flexibility. So, you know, the flexibility is a good thing for him. You know, I think he'll be the second Temple guy off the board, I would assume. Second, third round, probably.
Yeah. I think he's a second round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then with Jihad, again, you know, if we look at Jihad Thomas and Nate Harrison, two positions that are deemed to be pretty deep in this draft. So in Jihad's case, Fran said he hopes that he comes in a little heavier. Like, I guess he played the season at, what, 180, 185?
Guess what he weighed in after that? The official weigh in of Jihad Thomas. I'll tell you but real quick. Hassan measured at 6'2", 237.
6'2", 237 for Hassan. Jihad.
Deion actually measured in at 6'4", so that's good.
Okay.
Yeah.
For Jihad, I'm going to say, so he's been down in Florida, 191.
What are you, Matt?
I'll say 193.
190 on the dot. Jihad Thomas. Okay. So that's good. So he put on weight from college time.
Like 210. He ate pure processed lard down in Fort Lauderdale.
Just huge. Lost a lot of time off his feet.
So slow.
Incredibly
really just will not be drafted.
Regardless, just still think he probably has to put on another 10 pounds maybe?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, 5'10", it depends. Like, Jihad Thomas isn't going to be, like, a traditional back.
Yeah.
NFL, right?
Yeah.
Like,
no.
He's going to be a return man if he plays. He'll play, yeah. Like, you could use him in different forms.
Special
like,
teams guy, and Fran mentioned him even, like, a guy that could be in coverage. Because he spent time as a cornerback and can, you know, he's used to being in the open field and tackling in the open field. But I'll be interested to see what he does there. Again,
he could easily put on another 5. Like, to Matt's credit, though, he could put on another 5, 10 pounds and not lose any speed. Like, you could get up to 200, 195 with that. It'd be fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am, meanwhile, looking to get down to 195.
How's your, are you still on your soup diet?
Yeah, it kind of plateaued a little bit, but I'm training for, like, an 8K. We don't pay, most people don't train for an 8K.
Kyle talked about this. He ran 2 miles yesterday.
You would have thought I ran a marathon. Like, they hurt right now. But that's the first time I ran it. 18 months, 24 months. I also ran in basketball shoes because I couldn't find my running shoes, so I ran in basketball shoes.
Oh, that doesn't help.
Yeah, it's fine. It's not like I was running a marathon.
I couldn't get away with that now. If I got to run, it's being like padded shoes.
I mean, I wasn't running in dress shoes. I was running in basketball shoes. Like, people run in basketball.
Where was this a run in Glenside? On this
I went to Penn State Abington's track. So while I'm running 8 laps around the track, Division III lacrosse, women's lacrosse team is practicing in the middle. And they're just like gunning balls, people just off and along.
I could see Kyle just casually like struggling his 2 mile through his 2 mile run.
Oh yeah, I wasn't doing it well. Like, I'm not gonna reveal my time, but I wasn't running fast. And these people are they're athletes.
Rocky ran in black jeans and a coat through Russia/Vancouver in Rocky IV.
So was that filmed in Vancouver?
I believe so. Yeah, those
Vancouver gives a lot of. Tax credits, a lot of credits to people that are willing to film there.
Yeah,
that's why there's a lot of films from Vancouver.
We film Al Scoop the movie, we'll go out there.
Who plays you in Al Scoop the movie? Well, we think we did this before. Mm-hmm. I think I said Luke Wilson. Luke Wilson, if his career took a path forward.
The story of John DiCarlo.
All right, so Nate Harrison.
Nate Harrison. I thought this was interesting too because Fram was pretty high on him again. You know, with the depth at cornerback and defensive back in this draft, you could see Nate maybe being a guy that would have to sign as a free agent somewhere. But again, another guy who could, obviously all these guys could really, really help themselves this week with Hassan. If he helps himself, it's maybe he bumps himself into the end of the first round. Dion maybe solidifies himself as a second round pick. And then for Nate and Jihad, it's if they have good weeks this week, it's, hey, I'll get drafted. So, I mean, Nate. Another interesting story, again, not unheard of to go back and forth between wide receiver and cornerback, but another guy who came in who was unheralded, and really all these guys, especially Hassan, with the exception of Dion, who had the offer, was he committed to Cincinnati?
Yeah, he was committed to Cincinnati.
And he went to Hargrave, right? He had a year prepped and then came in as a gray shirt, I think. I think he came in for spring ball as freshman year.
Yeah, because the story is Rule went and visited him on a Friday, said come to Temple, and he was enrolled at Temple on Monday.
Gotcha. So, at bottom line is if all four of these guys get drafted, I mean, it's already at other programs, it's commonplace for them to have 4, 5, 8 people at the combine. For Temple, it's a program record as far as they're saying that they have four players at the NFL combine, so that's good for them. And in Nate's case, I think that's a heck of a story if he gets drafted, because even this year, I mean, he was solid, but he definitely wasn't a guy that you're talking about in national circles. Oh, Nate Harrison, a player to watch out for.
That's because it's college. So, like, Tavon Young didn't have a great senior year, if you look at it from that stance.
Right.
In reality,
up,
nobody throws at him because they're an NFL cornerback.
Right.
And because
he
got banged up.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the way Tavon, with Tavon senior year, you think, like, the only reason that I would say that Nate wouldn't be in that same position where Tavon was in that fourth, fifth round is because of the depth at cornerback. I mean,
right.
We've heard a lot about it with the Eagles. The Eagles, you know, might be in a position to take two cornerbacks, and maybe Nate ends up staying in Philly. But I think he'll probably be a later round, you know, sixth, seventh round guy. I think he'll have to. He's still in a position where he needs to, you know, seal up his draft spot in the combine. I don't think you can go into the combine saying Nate's definitely going to be drafted. I think if he puts up some good numbers at the combine, I think he'll be a later round pick. Mm-hmm. But he still has some proving to do.
He was a guy that was literally recruited to be a MAC wide receiver,
right?
Mm-hmm. And he wasn't a good one at that. Like he had a five catch game against Vanderbilt and then disappeared for the 2014 mm-hmm. season. And then now he's probably going to be an NFL.
Remember there was a deep ball that he could have brought down against Memphis on night game,
and he just
went off his fingertips or he didn't catch it. But again, a great story there. I talked to Fran, as you heard there. He actually touched on P.J. Walker a little bit. P.J.'s not at the combine. You know, height-wise, I don't know if his measurement is in. I think they're probably going to get P.J. at like 5'11". I don't even know if he's...
PJ wouldn't get measured at the combine because he wasn't at the combine.
Sorry. Brain cramp there. Anyway.
I mean, they measure every college player.
Yeah.
Lineup guys, it's going to take a while. Deion sneaks him in.
Yeah, we should note, so Temple's Pro Day will be next Wednesday, so we'll literally be coming right off of that as we record next week. So should be a pretty interesting Pro Day. A lot of teams, I would imagine pretty much every team will be represented. This will probably be the most crowded Pro Day they've had here since maybe the year Muhammad Wilkerson got drafted.
Maybe. I mean, Pro Days you always got to take with a grain of salt. Like, there's always the, Ohio State Pro Day is always everybody runs like a 4-2-1 because, like, it's always, like, kind of fudged a little bit. Mm-hmm. But, like, it'll be interesting. Yeah, like, does PJ measure in at 5'10", 5'11", or does mm-hmm. he somehow squeak out like a 6 foot? Like, mm-hmm. he has the arm strength, and mm-hmm. at times he's shown the ability to really get in some tight windows. But there are times, as mm-hmm. every Temple fan knows, PJ's made some bad decisions. Mm-hmm.
And then looking ahead, he mentioned Ventel Bryant. We're talking about, you know, in years ahead. Really likes Rockwell Armstead. Now Rockwell will be a junior next year. Now, hey, if Rockwell Armstead has a season next year worthy enough of leaving early, great for him. I don't know if I'd necessarily see that.
I don't think the offense is going to lend itself to Rockwell Armstead carrying the ball 280 times.
No.
Like, I think there's still going to be enough. That being said, even with the bad performance against Wake Forest, Rockwell Armstead averaged like 5.9 yards a carry last year.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
For him to actually step into that feature back role, like, I don't think – I would assume a 1,000-yard season is like the expectation for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, again, a lot to break down, a lot to listen to there. And we'll have more for you next week, coming off Pro Day, which again is a week from today. So it's next Wednesday as we record on Wednesday. So let's get into the position breakdown. So this week, as we lead up to spring ball, which starts in a couple weeks, right?
Starts March 22nd.
Yeah, 3 weeks from Monday.
Yeah, so
2 weeks from Sunday.
And again, I mean, it's going to be a really interesting spring season to cover, not just because of the new staff and the new offense, but again, a lot of positions up for grabs. Now today. And talking about the pass catchers, so to speak, the wide receivers and the tight ends, we're looking at one group where things are pretty much solidified, and then another group, the tight ends, where things are pretty much wide open.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're talking about the receivers, you have your usual suspects. I mean, this is, I'd say, arguably the team's biggest area of strength, right?
Yeah.
You know, with Ventel Bryant, with Kirkwood, with
Donis Jennings.
We'll see. You know, they've talked a lot about, we mentioned before, that this could be an offense where slot receivers could thrive.
Right.
Mm. I think you almost have to treat the slot receiver as another starting spot.
Yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah, and honestly, not to sidebar too quickly, I guess it's kind of related. I kind of get why they moved Jeremy Jennings to wide receiver now, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, he just came in second in the state behind Journey Brown by 1/100th of a second. What, the 60 meter? Is that what it was?
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, Jeremy Jennings might bring... We talked a lot about last year about how Randall Jones and Freddie Johnson might bring a lot of speed to this team. Jeremy Jennings might bring a lot of speed to this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm kind of interested to see what happens with those guys. Because, obviously, they were, you know, so... They both were redshirted, right?
No, Randall
played enough where he's going to be a sub. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, and Randall Jones saw some time as he took a couple kickoffs.
As a kick returner,
right?
And then he had a concussion and he was pretty much out for the rest of the year.
And those guys, especially Freddie Johnson, was like, wow, this is the fastest guy in this class. Now they really have to work to break any sort of rotation to work into the lineup, and now they'll be in a new offense. I'll be interested to see what those guys do. I mean, we know, obviously, you hope if you're Temple that that Jennings and that Bryant and that Kirkwood take that next step that you want them to take as receivers. They could all even be better, but I'll be interested to see how Freddie Johnson and Randall Jones handle competition, handle a new offense, because there's a lot there. It's a crowded position.
Right. And it's a place when, even speak to what you're saying, where last year was kind of obvious. Go back 2-3 years ago, Cortrell Simpson was supposed to be that guy.
Yeah.
He ran a 4-3, whatever, at one of the camps. It was this huge thing. Cortrell Simpson's going to bring a lot of speed. He's going to be a defensive back this coming off season, or this coming season. So,
I think
back to the wide receiver. Kind of echoing off what Fran W said, I think Ventel Bryant's a pro. I think by the time his body continues to develop, he gets that level, he has the speed, he has the size, I think Ventel Bryant's a future NFL wide receiver. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, you have two guys in Adonis Jennings and Keith Kirkwood, who this is their last go-around. Adonis Jennings, towards the last third of the season last year, it finally showed, like, this is why this guy was a 4-star recruit.
Right.
Like, he finally started to look like he was... That first touchdown against the Military Bowl against Wake Forest.
Right, great route.
His
really
run to grab just goes up there and gets it. Like,
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see. There's only so many balls you can go around, though, right? So I think that's going to be a type of situation where, with those wide receivers, even Ventel, I'll throw into this, I don't think you'll see a guy next year that really wows you with, like, oh, that guy had 1,200 yards, 1,300 yards. I think you're going to see a lot of guys in that 600-yard range, and it's going to be arguably, like you said, the position of strength.
Mm-hmm. Rosen, I thought it was a really interesting year for Kirkwood because of, I think when you start talking spring football and projecting, you have a tendency to pay attention to the incoming recruiting class, and we're sitting here thinking, okay, what is Freddie Johnson going to do? What's Randall Jones going to do?
What's Isaiah Wright going to do?
We're quite sure how he was going to be used, and they obviously worked him into a lot of Wildcat stuff, and now we're talking about him maybe being more of a 10 carry guy,
right,
player as a running back. But Keith Kirkwood quietly had really solid season.
Mm-hmm.
So
well, he was kind of fell underneath your radar because he comes in originally supposed to sail out the year after transferring from Hawaii. He was almost strictly a basketball guy in Neptune.
Yeah.
Comes in, he actually had like 80 yards against USC, like in his like first college game when he was at Hawaii. Transfers back here, gets declared eligible. He gets that touchdown in the first game. Then he kind of disappears the rest of the year. Then he played, one game in 2015, then got, injured. I think he got injured in the Penn State game. Out for the rest of the year. So, yeah, he was an afterthought. Like, he might not have been an afterthought to Glenn Thomas and Matt Rhule, but he was to us. And, and he kind of comes out of nowhere, and he shows the fact, he has that athletic ability to really do some things.
Mm-hmm. But outside of Bryant and Kirkwood and Jennings, I'll be interested to see what Marshall Elliott does because he was kind of the story of the spring last year. And, the story of the spring doesn't always end up being the story of the regular season.
He showed some glimpses at the beginning, but he got dinged up, too.
Yeah, so...
And that was always his thing. He couldn't stay
healthy. Yeah, he couldn't stay healthy. He dealt with some really, really bad injuries in high school. He was under-recruited because of that. But, I'll be interested to see what he can do when he's healthy in spring ball. I mean, he'll be somebody that, I'm sure he'll come up with Dave Patnood, assuming he's healthy. I'm sure his name will come up. And then you look at the slot receiver spot, Freddie Johnson, Randall Jones, Isaiah Wright, a bunch of guys.
Roger Gansey. Yeah.
Roger Gansey's probably the favorite to be the slot receiver after the season he had last year. He dealt with some drops, but I thought overall he had a pretty good year. The slot receiver spot, I think, is the biggest spot that we're going to be, focused on and looking at to see who can kind of run away with that.
It'll also be interesting. I mean, we could say this about any position, but it'll be really interesting to see how each of these guys responds to a new staff, new coaching. Maybe a guy like Jones or Johnson really responds well and really, really hits the ground running and has a good season. And now, if you look at the tight ends, completely wide open with Colin Thompson graduating and moving along. What's that?
Ramon Deloach
moving along. So, it sounds like this is an area where, you have the two guys who redshirted could make an impact. It seems like, in talking to Ed Foley, it seems like Steve Petrick is more your tough blocking tight end, and Kenny Yeboah is more your pass catching, get down the field, H-back type of guy. Mm-hmm. They're intrigued by their strength, their athleticism. It'll be interesting to see how things play out there. I wonder how much Dave's offense will utilize the tight end. I'm sure, again, at this point in the season, before we even get to spring ball, any coordinator will say, we're going to be multiple. We're going to try to get the ball around to as many people as possible. But I think there's really just so much to watch this spring. I mean, we're going to be focused in on the quarterbacks a lot. But the tight end position, I think, is really intriguing.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Yeboah. You mentioned Petrick. I think a guy, and this is just, he hasn't really done anything yet to this point, but he had some decent offers coming out of high school, and kind of a hybrid of that is like a Patrick Anderson. Mm-hmm. Originally was just a big wide receiver coming out of Western PA.
And he's put on weight.
Now he's up to 265 in there. Like, you would think that he might be able to offer you a little bit of both. And like I said, it's going to be a completely wide open competition.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I'd mentioned about, and I've sort of heard, maybe Ed had told me this, that Anderson, if he continues to put on weight,
could be a lineman,
mm-hmm. could be a tackle to say, okay, maybe are we intrigued enough to maybe, you know, make this kid a tackle? So, again, tons of stuff to watch for in the spring. I'll be interested to see. I mean, Ed Foley's a big, I mean, he's a big fan of both those guys, of Petrick. He keeps talking about how tough Steve Petrick is. Really likes Yeboah. It was Yeboah and Archibong that both got into, the Charlotte game this year.
For like one series.
So, two more guys to watch in the spring there. So, transitioning into a little bit of basketball before we get to the mailbag. So, in case you missed it, Temple's basketball team took them not one, but two overtimes to beat a five-win Tulane team. But, you know, hey, I mean,
wins a win.
It's exciting late-season basketball. Mike Robbins, interesting story, scores 7 points out of the gate, doesn't score again. But actually, not only was it his senior day start, but actually contributed and played pretty well.
That might be the first time in a while because that walk-on comes. I remember they would always be like the Jake Dodino, the Rafael De Leon games.
Yeah, it was like they'd be in for a couple minutes, they'd make a mistake, and then Fran would just do the rounded up type of situation. So, Mike's a cool story, though. If you had a chance to listen to that press conference, I mean, he actually was a pretty good player at Lower Marion, decides to go to St. John's, decided he missed the game, came back to take classes at Community College of Philadelphia. He said, I decided to go for a run. I ran 2 miles and I threw up. And he said, I looked at myself in the mirror and said, are you serious?
I'm just saying, I ran 2 miles. I did not throw up Mike Robbins.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there.
Can you dunk, though?
No, but I'm also not. He was probably 19 when he did this.
Yeah, he's also an accomplished painter. So we know at this point, I mean, so there's the regular season finale down in Tampa at USF, a meaningless game. We know at this point that Temple's going to play East Carolina in the first round, and then
it's looking like SMU after that.
Yeah, and East Carolina, we know on the road they haven't been great. At home, they've been good.
Right.
You know.
Find out what they're like on neutral.
What's that?
Let's see what they're like on a neutral site.
Yeah, so. So
sidebar, at what point does this tournament stop being at the XL Center? This is like the old argument when the A-10 tournament used to be at what? Initially it was at the Spectrum before it went to the
Don't forget it was in Orlando last year, so it has some consistency.
Yeah, this is what, 3 or 4 years now, or two or three, and I think it's supposed to be there next year.
What other team besides Connecticut benefits from having it there? It's not close to anyone
else.
I guess it benefits Temple a little bit, but other than that, I mean...
That's a central location.
It's kind of I don't want to say a geographically vague city, but I mean, like the Palestra at one point kind of tried to make a pitch for this conference tournament, right? They did some sort of feasibility. Yeah. So the huge issue with the Palestra is parking and media space, though.
Philadelphia, Memphis. I'd rather be in Memphis. That way you're closer to the Carolinas a little bit. The Texas schools can come in. The Florida schools can come in. Oh, then you're screwing over Connecticut, who's trying to leave the conference anyway, so who cares? Memphis is where this conference
is. Yeah, I think it's really dumb that Connecticut basically gets a home game out of this. No other team is anywhere near Connecticut.
It don't say anything about the facility. It's entirely because the conference offices are in New England.
There's plenty of good facilities out there.
Media days up there for football. Basketball facilities are up there. They had the basketball media day in Philadelphia Airport this year. Mike Oresco, if you're listening, this is a sham.
Well, they had the conference tournament, what was it, 2-3 years ago? The 9-win season that Temple had, that was that year the conference tournament was in Memphis at the FedEx Forum.
Yeah.
Well, I think FedEx Forum, if they could get that building it back, that would be a perfect venue.
Really fired up about this.
Or do it like the beginning.
You don't love the heartbeat?
Hartford's fine. No, it's not. It's awful. I mean, it's okay. It's just a city. Like, I don't need it. It's not convenient.
See all your good friends that work for Travelers up there.
Yeah.
The insurance exactly. capital.
If you're an actuary, I'm sure you love it up there.
Yeah.
No, they should do it on, like, an aircraft carrier. Like, they do, like, the beginning of the military tip-offs.
Well, if you go to cover it next year, and it's on an aircraft carrier, and they say, you've come this far, we need you guys to swim out to the carrier.
I wouldn't make it. I would backstroke it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Hey. Well, we'll see. Maybe that's something for next year. So Temple will be playing.
Temple, I mean, not that it matters because they're a whatever team. If you're a Temple fan, I would have preferred that they play Cincinnati in the second round. They make it. I think SMU is not a good matchup for them at all.
No. And again, this team hasn't been dependable enough to know. I mean, we're definitely not sitting here at this point saying, oh, maybe they make a bit of a run. No.
Although Shiz Olsen did say he thinks that they can win the tournament.
He said that after they lost to UCF, too. He said, I think we're going to win out and win this tournament.
Yeah. He's an optimistic guy.
and he had 10 free throws.
And again, if they are going to make any sort of a run, what needs to happen?
They need to shoot 57% from three like they did again the
Yeah, they're not, if they're hitting from three, great. If not,
yeah.
And who else needs to play better?
Obi Nwechionyo.
Yes. Yes.
If Obi Nwechionyo plays like he did against St. Joe's in the upcoming conference tournament, then maybe they have a chance to beat SMU. Maybe they have a chance to win it all.
Again, meaningless. But how about Mark Williams?
Yeah,
Mark Williams had a hell of a game.
20-point game.
20 points.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On his last game at the Lee Corr Center.
Unless they somehow get in the NIT. But even if you get in the NIT, you have to imagine they're probably not hosting games, right?
I guess it depends on what the matchup is.
Yeah, right.
Well, let's get into the mailbag. The sometimes serious, sometimes silly.
Sometimes light
this week. Just a couple of questions. Unless anything has come across as we're about to talk. We're just at these two questions here. Multi-part questions. First one from Sam Foreman, Storman Foreman, SBF underscore TU17.
Maybe he didn't want you to say his name on there.
That's too late. Everybody knows who Sam is. Former leader of the Cherry Crusade student section. So here's Sam's question. Temple football has had some notable successes recently with players changing positions. Is this unique to TU or a large trend in NCAA football? I've been meaning to ask for weeks. Finally remembered. So it came to Sam. Thank you for the question. What do you think?
No, it's definitely not unique to Temple. I mean, it happens everywhere, right? Richard Sherman was wide receiver, couldn't crack the rotation at Stanford, asked to be moved to defensive back, ends up being defensive back. Lane Johnson came to Oklahoma as a junior college quarterback. Mm-hmm. Jason Peters played
tight end.
But did he transition to lineman in the NFL, or did he do that by like his senior year?
I think he came into the NFL as a tight end.
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. So, I mean, it happens. I do think it's interesting that we talked about four guys in the combine and three of them switched positions. Mm-hmm. No, four. Because Deion played defensive tackle at Hargrave a little bit. Mm-hmm. So, you had all four of those guys switched positions.
And Jeff Collins talked a lot about position flexibility, on signing day. So.
Yeah. Malik Burns doing that.
Yeah.
It's
definitely not a unique thing. I mean, I think Temple has had to be, I wouldn't even say creative, because here we are saying it's a fairly common thing. But yeah, I mean, I think I think the staff will be very much the same in terms of like trying to get guys in wherever they can. I don't know. And again, looking around the country, a guy that I think of, most people probably won't think of, I thought of him because he's my friend's son, Paul Zeiss, right at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, his son Elijah Zeiss, who Temple had recruited. Temple, I think, was his second choice had he not gone to Pitt. Pretty good wide receiver at North Allegheny High School outside of Pittsburgh, and now he's playing linebacker.
He got injured, right?
Yeah, he got injured, and now he's playing linebacker. So, yeah, to answer Sam's question.
I think he got injured after he moved to linebacker. I think he was playing linebacker, and then that's when he had a season injury.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, Sam, to answer your question, no, it's not. I don't even know if it's a trend. I just think it's something that's always happening.
Yeah, and most high school, most Division I athletes at the high school level, they play multiple positions.
Yeah.
Jake Robinson, who we didn't even talk about in the tight end, played defensive back at Haddonfield.
Yeah. Played cornerback.
Yeah, most of it comes from the fact that like these guys get into a serious training program, and usually it's you can be an offensive lineman or a defensive lineman.
Mm-hmm. Or, hey, maybe you lost your starting quarterback job to Mike Girardi, and maybe you should be our tight end now. Von Charlton.
Yeah.
He was a first-team All-Mac, according to Phil Steele.
According to Phil Steele, who was just a tad off with that. So.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. Second and final question from James Rutfield.
There's two questions in here.
Two questions here.
Three questions in this mailbag.
There's another? There's a third? Oh, including two sources of questions, three questions. So, James Rutfield, JR, you're serious. What is the biggest this-is-actually-happening moment you've had while covering Temple? We'll go with that one first, and then we'll get to a second question.
I have four that come to mind.
All right.
Two involve Navy. One involves that 09 season. They go down to Annapolis, and Bernard Pierce runs all over Navy. They get to six wins, I think, and that was their first like good win. I was like, oh, wow.
Like James Nixon had that kickoff return.
Like, I was like, because that was a fourth. I think they even had to like hold them off in the fourth quarter. Like that was my first like, okay, wow, that's actually like a good win for them. Then maybe they're finally turning the corner. Second one is this year when they beat Navy in the conference championship, just the way they did it. I think maybe only you predicted a win in that game. I think it might have just been you. I think I predicted a loss, I believe.
In conference championship game?
I think so.
Okay.
But, yeah, the way they won that, I was like, wow, I can't believe they're just running all over this team. Number three is 2010. We're at Temple versus Maryland, the Verizon Center, when they got shut out of a bowl that year.
Oh, yeah.
And I was we talked to Bill Bradshaw. I remember just being like, geez, like, they won nine games or eight games this year. How'd they
eight
not get
four,
into a bowl?
Yeah.
And then number four happened 3 months ago or 2 months ago when the day, like, when you start hearing from a couple different people, a couple different sources, like, I'm pretty sure Matt Rule was leaving. And then it finally breaks. And it starts off, like, like every coaching change, it starts off in the beginning, you're like, no, they're not leaving. This is bad info. And then it kind of gets more, and you're like, it became kind of overwhelming. Like, yeah, Matt Rhule's leaving.
Yeah. What about you, Matt?
I'll give you a couple. The first one that stands out to me is the NCAA tournament game last year against Iowa at Barclays Center, when Obi gets pushed in the back, shoved in the back. As the buzzer is sounding, and who was the big man that tipped it in? His name escapes me. The Iowa's big man tips it in at the buzzer.
It was like off Jared.
Their center, right?
Yeah.
And
because it wasn't their good guy. It wasn't the guy that transferred from Wisconsin. It was like the goon of a center they had in there.
Yeah. So he hits that tip in, and I'm sitting there. I'm like, wow, you know, how is that a no call? And you see the replays over and over again. Yeah, I was like, wow, and that whole sequence where Dingle gets fouled just kind of by chance, and he has the hand problem. It wasn't really an intentional foul. It was just, you know, kind of a foul by chance. You know, sometimes you wonder why he was on the floor. But
Adam Woodbury,
yeah. So yeah, that moment kind of stood out to me, where I was like, wow, that whole sequence at the end of the game was kind of crazy, how Quentin DeCozy makes the three free throws, the three clutch free throws of his life, and then, you know, they still lose that game. At that point, when DeCozy hit those three free throws, I'm thinking overtime, worst case scenario. So that's the first one that comes to mind. And then the Temple USF NCAA tournament game, I forget what year it is, in Nashville.
2012.
Yeah, USF.
2012.
Yeah, it was 2012.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, that game as a whole. After that game,
couldn't score.
Yeah, I mean, the first they were winning at halftime.
So flat.
But they still came out flat.
And that was right after Ohio beat
North Carolina.
So it was like, I remember being like, if they win this game, like, they have a pretty straight shot.
Yeah, they watched Ohio beat North Carolina, or was it Ohio beat Michigan?
I think it was North Carolina. 2012.
There was a 13 seed beat a 4 seed. I want to say it was Michigan. I'm
positive it was Carolina, and they would have had Ohio in the second round.
Well, they definitely would have had Ohio. Yeah. It's just, who did they play for that?
I'm going to say it was Carolina.
Temple.
And TJ DeLeo got hurt in that game, right? And Aaron Brown was not good defensively. Like, the one guy who was actually working on defense in that game before he got hurt was TJ, and they got hurt, mm-hmm. right? Both teams shot, like, what, 22-23% in the first half?
They wouldn't have played North Carolina the second round, because they were a 5 seed that year.
I'm pretty sure.
They were a 5, they lost to the 12,
yeah.
So they wouldn't have played the 1 in the next round. The 1 plays the 8-9,
But was Carolina a 1 seed that year? I don't think they were.
Yeah, they were. Temple would have played Michigan. And if they'd won that, they would have played North Carolina.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Ohio lost to North Carolina by 8. That's not bad.
Yeah.
That game as a whole was a game where you were just like, wow.
58-44 was that game.
Yeah. And they had some. That was a good team they had. I mean, they had Juan Fernandez, Ramon Moore. I mean, Khalif. That was a good team.
I forgot they were a 5 seed that year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they've been a 5 seed twice in any frame, right? The other time they lost to Cornell.
Yeah, the time they got smoked by that really good Cornell team.
Yeah.
For me, there are a few that stick out. I'd say 2 football, 1 basketball. I mean, with football, couple of games last year. I don't know that I ever thought I would ever see them at a point where they were beating Penn State. Just looking around and kind of taking that scene in near the end of the game, they fall behind 10-0, and you hear teams talk all the time about, like, oh, we got to stay composed, and then to actually see a team go out and do it, the play calling, the little pitch out to Jihad, right. Just to see them all of a sudden just completely teeing off on Hackenberg, and it was a fun game to cover, fun game to watch. I mean, that was just a cool moment for the program to be there to cover it, and then just kind of looking out into the crowd and seeing how people were reacting, even just going out, even after we were done writing, going out into the parking lot and seeing that people were still there, and that was something to see. And then the Notre Dame game. I mean, just the atmosphere there again, just never thought that there would ever be that type of atmosphere for a Temple game. Of course, there were a lot of Notre Dame fans there, but to see the city get that excited about college football. We've talked about it a million times. It was the perfect storm. The Eagles were on a bye week, and people were really into that game.
Catches that touchdown to put them up.
Right? Yeah. And again, in those games, obviously you beat Penn State, so they have a lot to show for it there. But even against Notre Dame, again, another pitch out to Jihad, where he reads the safety, puts his foot in the ground, makes a move. Yeah, the touchdown catch by Shippen.
That catch alone might have gotten Brandon Shippen on practice squads.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he didn't do much out of that, but he just muscled his way in there, and then he was on the Rams.
Even that stop when Deshaun Kizer had them driving down, and and what Praise got his hand on the ball, yep. and Tyler gets the interception, and the way they hit, the way they were able to hit Kaiser. I mean, Kaiser's run. I mean, but Tyler Matakavich will be the first to admit that he bit and should not have, gone for that fake by Kaiser, yep. and then he comes around. I mean, just a hell of a play by DeShone Kizer. A lot to take into that game.
That was the only play of the game where it was like, yeah, Notre Dame's at a different level than
Tyler. Yeah, like, yeah, absolutely. And even if you zeroed in, I mean, yes, there were a couple of times where they hit Kaiser, but otherwise that Notre Dame offensive line was really good. And then I think of the Temple Duke game at the Wells Fargo Center a few years ago, where I think before that Temple had not beaten Duke since the 90s when they beat him at the Spectrum when Mark Jackson was on that team,
right.
and then Mark Jackson ended up getting suspended because he elbowed Greg Newton in the head. And then he sat out. He was suspended for a game, and John Chaney sat out with him because he didn't think the suspension was fair. But it had been several years since they had beaten Duke, and just to see that atmosphere, the way Khalif played, the way Juan Fernandez played, a significant moment for the program there. Those are a few of the moments that I would say.
Came to mind. Maybe Deontay's 35-point game against Tennessee.
Yeah.
I think that one stood out. Because that was the first game, that was the first ranked team.
Tennessee was top 10.
Yeah, I think they were ninth. Yeah, and that was the first big non-conference win
close,
of France.
Yeah, that was France.
Yeah,
real.
He played well. Sergio almost played well in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's if you Google like Deontay Christmas on YouTube, there's just
that montage.
It's like this rap song by Ike Turner. It's like young Ike Turner. It's just Deontay jacking up threes. It's like, live from the Lear Court Center.
Yeah.
And the uniforms back then were so bad. Mm-hmm. Like the best, they don't age well. And then you see like a young LaVoy Allen who's now in like his sixth year in the NBA, just like hopping up and down as a freshman.
LaVoy was a sophomore.
He was a freshman
that year. No, I think he was a sophomore that year because LaVoy's first start and first game was they played at Tennessee that year and he started.
Okay.
So I think LaVoy was a sophomore that year.
Yeah, it was.
LaVoy's
freshman year,
they went to the tournament, got smoked by Michigan State.
Yep.
Tom Izzo called it a six eyes defense on Deontay, and they really shut him down. So I think
they lost to Arizona State the
correct.
Next year, right?
James, the Fighting James.
That Michigan State team had, what was his name, Drew Neitzel? The little white guy, little white bald guy?
I think so. I mean, they were loaded. I mean, I don't think anybody expected them to win that game. And the following year, it was the year where, Samaj Inge went, one of 10.
Yeah,
and Ryan Brooks, again, to this day, one of the best defensive performances of James Harden. Held
to,
him
I mean,
points.
To James' offense, James Harden was nothing close to what he is now.
Yeah.
And then after that, they lost to Cornell. And then let's just go down the line to Fran Dunphy first up. Actually, they made it to the second round.
We're probably bringing some pain to people right now.
So, second part of Mr. Rutfield's question. Also, give me a breakout star for next year, basketball and football.
I'm going to start with, do we want to do it individually, or do we want to just do basketball and then football?
Let's do it by sport. You start us off with basketball.
Basketball, I think the obvious one to me, at least, is Quinn Rose.
Yeah.
I think Quinn Rose slides, and he's having a good freshman year. He might finish with averaging 10 points a game. I think you see him sliding into that. He plays 32 minutes a game, might be flirting with 17, 18, 19 points a game.
Yeah. And I think Damian Moore will take a step next year. I think he'll take a step next year. But for football, I mean, Quinn Rose is obviously the obvious one. But
so you're doing Quinn Rose or basketball?
I would say Quentin Rose, maybe J.P. Moore, or maybe Dre Perry is good enough to, maybe either one of those guys is good enough to come in and be a breakout star as a freshman. I mean, they'll get the opportunity because they need wing talent badly, so it would be kind of hard to bet against Quentin Rose, I would agree.
Yeah.
Football, I think just because opportunity and the fact that he's the only real experienced guy at that position outside Sharif Finch. I'm going to say Jacob Martin's my breakout star for defensive end next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he has an opportunity because you're replacing a lot of productivity on the defensive line. Would surprise me to see him in that 5-6-7 sack range next year.
I don't know. I mean, there's just so many spots that you could kind of pick because, you know, they do lose a lot. I mean, it's not going to be the flashy pick, but I think Matt Hennessy is going to be a really good center.
Mm-hmm.
I think you might even be able to upgrade from Brendan McGowan at center. So I'll say Matt Hennessy is going to be a really, really stable center for them.
One of the guys who some of the so-called experts out there were a little lukewarm on him when he signed late in the recruiting period, and now he might end up being like a 4-year starter at center.
Yeah, for me, I'm gonna go with Karamo Diabate. I think, yeah, I mean, he played a little bit this year. I think he'll have a lot to prove again to all these guys have a lot to prove to a new coaching staff, new defensive coordinator, new line coach. I'll be really interested to see what he can do. I think he could be a breakout guy in that defensive line.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Now, we did get, as we're sitting here...
Oh, sorry, I'm kind of curious to see if Jeff... I guess this would be a question. I wonder if Jeff Collins knew Karamo beforehand. I mean, Karamo was that level of prospect that he was... He might not have gotten offered by Florida, but he was... No, he got offered by Florida. So he was recruited by Florida. I wonder if Jeff Collins was at least familiar enough mm-hmm. with him then.
As we're sitting here, we have two more mailbag questions that came in. One on the message board, one from our good friend Michael Guys, former Temple News sports editor, who's now working at a paper out in Idaho. So Michael asks us this question: in a Temple media basketball game, who is the number one pick?
Ooh,
that's a very good question, Michael.
Is people covering?
Let's limit it to people that cover the team right now, like this year's team. I have a sleeper. I'm trying to think if there's anybody outside of him. Well, no. Gelb would say it's him. Gelb would say he's like, oh, I'm like 6'5", blah, blah, blah. Gelb would say, I'm going
to
go,
well, I don't count guys that show up to two games a year.
Boom. Boom.
There we go.
Or, yeah, I'm going to say Owen McHugh. I think Owen's
good.
Yeah. I've seen Owen
play. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
He's much better than I am.
So, Owen McHugh, for those of you who are listening, Owen McHugh is the sports editor at the Temple News. Plays a lot of pickup ball over at, the Pearson McGonigal Complex. I would say Owen's the number one pick.
Yeah.
Unless Mark Narducci is just a fierce athlete that we don't know about.
Mike Jensen, I bet he could play a little bit.
I see Jensen is like an old school like post up guy, passes out of double teams.
Are
we forgetting anybody else?
I don't think so. I don't think there's anybody obvious.
Talk to me about Kyle Gauss, the basketball player.
Dirty. I've said this before. I throw a lot of elbows. I'm definitely I don't dribble that well, so I'm definitely a shooter. But no, dirty. Hmm.
Dirty player. Dirty Bill Laimbeer.
I play pretty dirty, too. I played in my senior year of high school is the last time I really played organized basketball. And I would just, I would throw elbows. And like
that's awesome.
I got thrown out of a game.
Thrown out of a game?
Yeah.
Tell us that story. How did that go down?
Well, it's kind of a ridiculous story on my part. But so
love it already.
The ref, we're down three at this point. There's 30 seconds left in the game. And we're scrambling. I think there was a foul on one of my teammates. I forget who it was, and it was just on the floor. And we were about to inbound the ball, and one person one of the other players from the other team just goes and jumps up and starts hanging on the rim for no reason, and he's hanging on the rim for a good 5 seconds. So I say to the ref, I'm like, look, he's hanging on the rim. That's a technical foul. We get two shots in the ball. The ref's like, I point right to him. The ref looks at the guy hanging on the rim. The ref's like, I didn't see it. I'm like, you just looked at him doing it. You definitely saw it. Don't lie. So the ref's like, no, I didn't see it. I can't call what I didn't see. And then I kind of lost it and freaked out.
I'm pretty sure Matt assaulted the ref.
I got, the ref was also not, the ref must have had a little bit of an anger to him. So he kind of got in my face and just added fuel to the fire and was pointing in my face. And it was bad. So we had to end the game a little early.
And then Matt turned in and broke out into jean shorts. Matt angry, turned into the Incredible Hulk. I was just kidding. There was not an additional question on the message board. So Mike's question was our final one. So thanks for listening. A big thanks again to Fran Duffy from the Eagles for all of his insight and perspective on the four Temple guys who were at the Combine this week. So we'll talk to you again next week. Again, we'll have lots to talk about with Temple's Pro Day being next week. We get 1 week closer to spring ball, and we'll be recording Temple plays in the conference tournament next Thursday. So we'll be recording a day in advance of that
maybe
game.
We'll even preview a basketball game.
We'll preview a basketball game. So
unlikely.
Yeah. So thanks for listening as always. Appreciate it, and we will talk to you next week.